Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting for today. This is an informational hearing on House File 10, which will be heard on the floor tomorrow. As all are aware, we are in a special session, and this bill was heard in Ways and Means Committee on Saturday night, and so this hearing is for informational purposes only. We did solicit written comments from the public. Those are in your packets and are posted on our website. And again, if those who are interested in commenting on this bill, we will accept comments into the future. But what we have now is posted and in your packets. Our agenda for today, and I'll be momentarily passing the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Cagle, will be a brief comments from me about the bill and the process leading up to its completion, and then we'll go have House fiscal staff and policy staff go through the bill, and then we'll have questions and answers from the committee, and we will adjourn promptly at noon. As is our tradition in the regular session, we will have Mr. Dodge take our role, and then we don't have any minutes to approve today, and I'll pass the gavel on to Vice Chair Cagle. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick?
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason?
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy? Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West?
Present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. And I will now pass the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Cagle, who will be chairing the meeting today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so we have special session House File Number 10, the Transportation Omnibus Bill Agreement. So Chair Hornstein, would you like to walk us through some of the highlights of the bill?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First of all, before I get into discussing the bill, I want to really give a big thank you to our staff, both partisan and nonpartisan, who worked so hard through this special session and actually through the conference committee process that we had over the most of the month of May leading up to the end of the regular session. And particularly Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris. You all have worked with both of them. You know how incredible they are. But both of them went well above beyond the call of duty here. We had many, many evening meetings, weekend meetings, particularly since the end of adjournment, and really marathon meetings with the Senate and the public sector, the executive branch. I did quite a bit of shuttle diplomacy between the Senate and the executive branch, anticipating that some of you might ask Representative O'Neill's question, was the executive branch in the room when we were negotiating? No, they were not. And so it really added some important element. They certainly were giving input into the process, but again, the staff was engaged with both the agencies as well as the Senate. So to Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris, a huge thank you. And I think you, your advice and counsel was so critically important in getting this bill done. It wouldn't have happened, obviously, without both of you, and we are deeply indebted to you, so thank you. I also wanted to thank members of the conference committee who worked very hard on this bill during the conference committee process, and also I was able to consult with all of you directly during the process with the Senate, and appreciated all of your perspective and input into that. So that was Representative Elkins, Representative Petersburg, Vice Chair Cagle, Representative Frederick from the House team. Thank you for your work during the conference process and beyond. And so, members, just briefly to the process, and then I'll just make some very broad comments of the bill, but we really want to hear from Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris, who can really walk us through the details. Where we left off as a committee, the bill passed off the House floor during the omnibus process, and then we immediately went into a conference committee in late April, early May. I don't remember when our last meeting was, or our first meeting was, but we met fairly regularly with the Senate, and we're able to come to agreement on 50 or so provisions in the same and similar category. And there was some pretty significant policy that we were able to agree on. Of course, we couldn't really begin to work on the fiscal aspects of the bill until there was a budget agreement. That agreement, as you are all aware, came on the last day of session. So again, as with every other finance division, our work was incomplete at the end of the regular session. So we then proceeded to develop a process with the Senate. We started negotiating with them really in earnest Monday, June 7th, and really more or less around the clock. This is a big bill. It's a complex bill. And we really went through every single provision that the House and Senate passed. And House File 10 is a result of agreements we reached with the Senate. As in any negotiation, there are some important items for both sides that dropped off, important items for both sides that are included, as well as the same and similar language that we adopted and actually enhanced during the conference committee process. So that is the, that is what you have before you and before us in House File 10. So just quickly, what are some of the things that did some of our priorities that are not included? None of the revenue raisers, unfortunately, that were included in the House bill are in House File 10. As you'll recall, we had a provision to index the gas tax to inflation. Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle, for that. That would have provided sustainable funding for a number of our priorities and initiatives. Some of those, of course, we can fund through the general fund, but only on a short-term basis. So that long-term, dedicated, sustainable funding that's so important for roads and bridges that we value so much was not included. The Senate rejected that. Same is true with the metro sales tax, which we envision funding a significant build-out of arterial bus rapid transit and stabilizing long-term funding for the local bus system. That was not included as well, but we did get, I'll talk in a minute about some of the bright spots in our final agreement where we were able to fund one and a good part of a second arterial bus rapid transit line. So in the short term, our agreement does address some of those issues. And again, the other, we don't have anything on license tab fee adjustments as a revenue raiser. And we don't have the adjustment to the MVEST increase that we had. So none of those four are in the bill. However, we had a $200 million general fund target that was adjusted slightly upwards during the course of negotiations. That is a very large general fund target for transportation. And so the task for Chair Newman and I primarily in this negotiation was how to divide up that 200 million plus general fund allocation. And I'm pleased to report that a number of our House priorities are funded in that general fund allocation. We have, for example, $57 million plus for the bus rapid transit program, the arterial BRT. This was really agreed to by the Senate because I think expansion of that mode has bipartisan support. And I was pleased to see that we have enough funding for the E line and most of the funding, state funding that we need for the F line is included. We also have money for active transportation, safe routes to school, the 494 commuter grant. There's a second daily, we have funding for the state share of the second daily train from the Twin Cities to Chicago. There's a freight optimization tool that Representative Elkins, we heard his bill, that's included. Another House priority, additional rail safety inspectors funded from the general fund, not from the railroads, but from the general fund is included. We have a huge priority for us was roads and bridges in terms of small cities and townships. That was included as a general fund allocation. Again, going into this whole process, the House believed that we needed to have a statewide multimodal approach to transportation. That includes, of course, covering all corners of the state and all modes. So we have the large transit, a relatively large for a general fund allocation, a transportation bill, a transit piece with arterial bus rapid transit, another important priority for the House, again, small cities and townships. And those are funded above levels previously given on those line items from general fund. Again, we want that sustainable, long-term, reliable funding source for small cities and townships that we could get through that modest indexing provision. But again, we do the next best thing, which is to give a higher than usual allocation for townships and small cities. And thanks to the members on this committee that prioritize that. You know, the MRSI program, the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, funded through this, state road construction, et cetera. So finally, I just wanted to end with the items that are included that were Senate provisions that we did not have in our bill. But I think, you know, in the interest of compromise, these are not necessarily things that the House has prioritized in the past. And in fact, on a bipartisan basis, I think we have some concerns about earmarking specific projects, but that was a very important item for the Senate. And I think in order to get to yes, we did include a number of projects. Those not nearly as many as the Senate had originally, but we wanted to make sure that in vetting those projects for inclusion in the bill, that MnDOT was able to move along on these projects in a timely way. So these are all ones that you know, construction can begin relatively soon on, some, you know, as early as next year, some in 2025, most of them in between that time frame. So these are, if not immediately shovel ready, along in the process. And we have a number of these projects that are studies. And of course, studies oftentimes can lead to projects. And we have a corridors of commerce allocation as well. And finally, a very high priority for the Senate was addressing the issue of transferring money to the general fund or moving from the trunk highway fund to general fund. Transfer isn't the right word, but having certain areas that are funded in the trunk highway fund funded through the general fund, that is going to take time to address the policy and finance issues in that. So a task force has been created, and we do have some of those general fund allocations for trunk highway purposes in this bill on a limited basis. But that process really will happen over the next 4 years. I just remembered one more thing. Of course, we fund, in addition to MnDOT and DBS, MnDOT and the Met Council, we fund DBS, and we are keeping all testing stations open in this bill that were closed, driver testing exam stations that were closed because of COVID, and we fund capital security. So those are the two highlights of the DPS. One last one that I really want to highlight that is so significant and such an important piece of this bill. Both on a bipartisan basis, we have our two members of our Dakota County delegation, a couple of members, we have several, but a couple of our members of our Dakota County delegation, Chair Ruth Richardson and Representative Kosnick, over the years have worked on metro mobility issues. And we have metro mobility as a forecasted budget item now, beginning in 2026. That is not only going to help, that is significantly going to help metro mobility with transportation of seniors, people with disabilities, and others, but it'll also help with Metropolitan Council's long-term financial stability. So that is a very significant piece of policy and finance that are in the bill. So with that, members, I will stop in terms of the broader overview of our process and the highlights of the bill. I guess at this point, Vice Chair Cagle, will we have our staff go through this? And then we can have member questions, I assume. I think we're going to break this up into fiscal first and then questions and then policy after that. Is that the intention here?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And I see Representative Torkelson, you have your hand up. Would you like to ask your question now or wait after staff goes through the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a process question I'd like to ask now, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Well, as you know, this meeting is scheduled to last right up till noon, and we have a noon deadline for amendments. It's a pretty tight time schedule. Is there any chance we could extend that deadline for amendments to give us a little more time to work on those?
Chair Hornstein?
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I think this is per House rule. I don't know if I can make a unilateral decision on an amendment deadline for, if it was the committee, I think I would feel a little more comfortable doing that. But, I'm certain that I can certainly communicate with our leadership. I'm sure I can't comment, Representative Torkelson. I think at this point, if you could do your best to get those in by noon, that would probably be best at this point.
I know. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I know work is in progress. I'm honestly not sure exactly where we are in the process, but I just wanted to note that it's a very tight timeline, and in order to pay attention to this hearing, makes it hard to work on amendments at the same time, especially in the remote nature of our business.
I understand, Representative Torkelson. This is the process around a lot of this has been challenging, and I recognize that. And I appreciate the fact that we were able to do this on Tuesday, allowing staff and others to get ready for the floor tomorrow. So we've had a few days at least to digest the bill, unlike some of the other divisions that have moved quite a bit faster. So do your best with the amendments, and hopefully there could be a little bit of flexibility, but I think 12 is the deadline. I think that leadership has established for amendments. Okay.
With that, we will move on to the spreadsheet walkthrough. So, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I won't screen share. I'll just sort of hit the highlights of the spreadsheet. But if there's any specific questions, I'd be happy to screen share and point out specific lines. So in members' packets, you should have received a spreadsheet dated 6/19, and it is a legal spreadsheet like this. The way to read these spreadsheets are the either the base funding level or the change item is in column A, the fund is in column B, then the previous biennium, fiscal 2020 and 2021, is in column E, and the base, which assumes no changes, is in column F. Then there's a series of columns that show the governor's recs, the House position, the Senate position, and the this was for the DE amendment in Ways and Means on Saturday. So the agreement columns are W through AC. I won't hit every change item, but I'll sort of highlight sections and maybe talk about a few of the kind of broader categories. So the first page and a half is all MnDOT's multimodal systems. It includes aeronautics, transit, civil air patrol, freight, and passenger rail. One series of change items that I'll note on this section and a few other sections is under aeronautics, transit, pieces of agency management under the MnDOT Trunk Highway Appropriation, and a number of DPS appropriations. Our Senate positions moving money that was previously Trunk Highway appropriated and making it become a general fund. And there's about 8 million worth of those over each biennium. So you can see the first of those on lines 28 and 29. So it's a negative for Trunk Highway spending and an increase for general fund spending. One other note on the first page, on line 49, the 494 Corridor Travel Demand Management Organization. In the original House position, this was an appropriation under the Metropolitan Council, but in the agreement, it is under MnDOT. Moving to the next page, about halfway down page two is the appropriations for state roads. These are almost exclusively out of the Trunk Highway Fund. So you can see the operations and maintenance appropriation and the planning and research on page two, the program delivery on page three, and the largest piece, the state road construction appropriation, on page, about a quarter of the way down page three. Then the base appropriation for corridors of commerce. Then about two-thirds of the way down on page three is the Trunk Highway debt service appropriation as a result of about $400 million in Trunk Highway bond authorizations. Then moving to page four, are the local road appropriations. So this is the county state aid highway appropriation and the municipal state aid street appropriation. And then a series of other local road appropriations, including local bridge, local road programs, and small cities development. Also, I'll note that the township one-time general fund appropriation is under the county state aid highway fund because that's where that appropriation is distributed, and it's on line 194. One unfortunate note I'll note on the spreadsheet, because of a totaling error in the FY 2021 biennium on this comparison sheet, there is the CASA appropriation on line 223 doesn't show up, and so in a subsequent spreadsheet, that'll be corrected, and you'll be able to compare between the current biennium and this proposed, and what's proposed in House File 10. Then on the bottom of page four is the appropriation for agency management. You'll see a number of general fund change items there. On page five is the MnDOT buildings appropriation. And then on the bottom of page five are the two Metropolitan Council appropriations. There's a number of items under transit system operations that are one time, including the Highway 55 corridor transit study, the zero emission transit vehicle transition plan, and then a one time $57.5 million appropriation for arterial bus rapid transit. And you can see the base funding level for Metro Mobility, With one note, which is there's policy language in House File 10 that would require the general fund to forecast the base for that starting in fiscal 2026. So that is kind of the tails of the tails. Then moving on to page six is the admin and related services appropriations for the Department of Public Safety. You can see a number of change items here. They're moving trunk highway appropriations to general fund. And then on page seven are the appropriations for the state patrol. And there are a number of sort of interacting appropriations here. For all the state patrol divisions, there are appropriation increases related to body-worn cameras. And there's also appropriation increases related to salaries. Those are in two places in the bill, both the appropriation language in Article 1 and also supplemental increases in Article 3. One other note on two of the larger change items for State Patrol. There is a governor's rec on line 371 that increases the trooper complement for patrolling highways, and also an increase for the trooper complement and non-sworn officers for capital security, and you can find that on line 401. Then moving on to page eight are the appropriations for driver and vehicle services. And just as a reminder, these appropriations are largely out of the special revenue funds that are generated from fees on transactions for either driver or vehicle services. There's operational increases and same-day driver's license programming, as well as exam station additional appropriations that are one-time for driver. And then under vehicle, there is something similar to the change in Senate position with the replacement of trunk highway appropriations with general fund. However, in this case, there are license plate fee increases that then reduce the highway user tax distribution fund appropriation to zero starting in fiscal 2023. And you'll notice one little, so that's essentially a Senate position, but you'll notice one slight difference in fiscal 2022, where there's still a little bit of highway user tax distribution appropriation in 22, and that's a result of 1 month worth of programming because the special session is bumping up against what would have been a July 1st effective date. Then moving on to page nine is traffic safety and pipeline safety. And that is the end of DPS. On page 10 is a list of items that were in the Senate position. And most of those general fund items and some of the trunk highway fund items were mentioned in a letter from MnDOT. In House File 10, there's just a single line for a general fund appropriation of $30.93 million, and you can see that on line 305 of the spreadsheet. Then page 11 is some of the miscellaneous agency items. On line 543 is the recognition of property tax interaction related to the Metropolitan Council transit borrowing. And then staff support for the freight optimization under deed on line 551. Then there's the total direct appropriations, again, with the note that there's an error in the FY21 base comparison. So that will be cleaned up in the next version of the spreadsheet. On page 12 are a list of various revenue increases or decreases. This has to do with things like changes in fees or tax rates. On the agreement column, you can see the unmanned aerial aircraft system enforcement, and then the recognition of federal dollars of $122 million for trunk highway. You can also see a transfer from the general fund to the Rail Service Improvement Fund, or MRSI, on line 589 and 590. And then some cancellations and permit revenue, that's under MnDOT. And then under the Department of Public Safety, Most of the items from line 604 through 615 relate to changes in fee revenue under DBS. Then, Madam Chair and members, the last page is a summary of the general fund appropriations. And so you can see on line 680 and 681, the approximate general fund increase over base for this biennium is about 220 million. And there's a little bit of that small change after the 220 is related to the amounts for the state trooper salary increases. Then you can see a small table breaking down the trunk highway bond appropriation amounts by the project. So you can see 113 million for regional and community investment priorities, which is noted in the MnDOT letter, 100 million for state road construction, and 200 million in each year, or in with 100 million in each year in the tails for corridors of commerce. And with that, that's the spreadsheet, and I'd be happy to ask or answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Let me expand here so I can see if there's any questions. I don't see anybody with their hands up right now. So with that, I believe we'd like to move on to Mr. Burris to explain the policy in the bill. Or Chair Hornstein, did you have any comments?
Yeah, I had gotten a question from a member of the committee about an issue with the MSAS allocation, and I wondered maybe if Mr. Lee could address that question.
Mr. Lee?
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members. Yeah, this was part of the local road error in the base year of the spreadsheet, and so they'll be corrected in the subsequent spreadsheet that will show the comparison from the current year's fiscal 20 and 21 to the proposal in House File 10. But I should probably note that both the County State Aid Highway, or CASA, and Municipal State Aid Streets Appropriation, or MSAS, are a little tricky to display because they're both constitutionally dedicated, essentially statutory appropriations. They show up as direct appropriations in the spreadsheet, but rider language allows MnDOT to spend money should HUTD revenue permit. So it's a little hard to compare on this direct appropriation spreadsheet, but I'd be happy to follow up and show the differences.
Okay, and one other item, Madam Chair. I did want to get back to Representative Torkelson in due time, and I have received confirmation that the rules do apply, that there is a hard and fast noon deadline for amendments, so hopefully you can get those in. Again, I'm pleased that we were able to get this bill out on Saturday, and we have 3 days now for people to digest it. So wanted to get back to you, Representative Torkelson, on that. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So, Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair and members, good morning. So I'll be walking through House File 10. I won't go section by section. I was asked to cover some of the highlights. So I'll be focusing primarily on some of the differences from House File 1684 as it passed the House versus what's contained in House File 10. To start, Article 1 contains the transportation appropriations, and this is largely the language that effectuates what Mr. Lee had walked through with the spreadsheet. So the first couple of sections lay out the direct appropriations for departments of transportation and part of public safety, as well as the Metropolitan Council. There are also a couple of sections in that first article on transfers, some carry forward authority from prior, the current budget biennium for Trooper Academy, as well as the appropriations for trunk highway corridor studies and local road project grants that's found in section 6 of Article 1 that's on page 24. The cancellations involve administrative holdbacks in the current fiscal year that are then increasing the amount of general fund dollars available to be appropriated in the upcoming budget biennium. And then the transfers that Mr. Lee had highlighted for the Mercy Program and then Special Revenue Fund account transfers related to the DDS accounts are in sections 9 and 10 in Article 1. Also in Article 1, there's a establishment of a conditional cancellation and reappropriation of a portion of Department of Public Safety appropriations that are in fiscal year 2021. And this is dependent on a collective bargaining agreement being finalized for the July 1, 2019 through June 30, 2021 period. So the period that's ending currently, it allows for cancellation of a portion of the funds and then reappropriates those same dollars in the subsequent fiscal years. Article 2 contains the trunk highway bonding authorization and appropriations that Mr. Lee had outlined for corridors of commerce, as well as state road construction generally, and then state road construction directed to regional and community priorities, investment priorities, along with bond sale expenses. Article 3 contains some salary increase provisions establishing percentage rate increases for Minnesota Law Enforcement Association membership, as well as supervisor and manager salary increases, and then appropriations that correspond to those increases. So there's a series of sections in that article laying that out for forward-looking, as well as some supplements for prior fiscal year and portions of prior fiscal year. Moving then into Article 4, and this is starting on page 33, this contains a wide variety of policy and finance articles. As I had noted at the outset, I'll just try to touch on highlights of changes and language that the committee had not discussed in the original transportation omnibus on the House side. One thing also that I'll note, I won't hit on all of them, but there are a few effective date changes, largely pushing out to August 1st instead of July 1st, or later in the case of a couple of provisions. And that's primarily to accommodate programming time that's necessary in order to implement some of the changes in the driver and vehicle services IT system. So moving into the provision, Section 1 establishes a requirement for commissioners of state agencies to provide additional detail on highway funds appropriations that are proposed in each biennial budget, so as part of the budget narrative. Then moving to bottom of page 35, Section 9 establishes a process for local units of government that are proposing to designate a bikeway where there would be elimination of disability parking, lays out requirements on the procedures that the local unit of government must go through. Also on page 36, section 10 allows for single occupant vehicles to use the MinPass system on certain on some federal holidays or state holidays, I guess both, if the Federal Highway Administration approves of that. Section 11 is one of several sections that both Representative Hornstein and Mr. Lee had noted. So this goes to modifications to what's considered a permissible use of highway dollars. So funds from the Trunk Highway Fund as well as the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is in some ways a recodification of an existing statute that lays out some purposes for which trunk highway dollars can't be used. What's established in Section 11 is a broadening of that in a couple of different ways. One is to broaden the list to identify some additional agencies within MnDOT and some functions for which the highway funds can't be used. The provision is also broadened to include the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and to cover all state agency commissioners. Of note, this has a delayed effective date along with a couple of other corresponding provisions. So this recodification and the provisions around these requirements would go into effect starting in fiscal year 2026. Moving to section 12 on page 38, this makes some modifications to the criteria and requirements around the Corridors of Commerce program. Section 13 broadens a legislative report on fund expenditures so that some additional detail on cybersecurity is also required to be reported on. Moving then to section 16, both House and Senate had a series of memorial highways and bridges. Another one is added in that had been Senate-only language. That's found on page 40 of House File 10 language. Moving next to section 22, this is on page 42 of the language. The original House language had a proposal around that came from a agency initiative. It was a proposal around extending the number of projects where MnDOT can use the construction manager general contractor method of contracting. And section 22 is an addition that also modifies that to reduce the number of projects that can be done in a given year from 4 down to 3. Later in the bill, you'll see that the number of projects that can be done is still extended or expanded, but this limitation is also put into place. Moving then to section 27, bottom of page 43, this is another piece of the substitutions of funding source for some purposes, and this would establish that the costs for MnDOT's central office building could not be covered through the trunk highway fund, and it also creates a statutory appropriation from the general fund for those costs, and this has a delayed effective date, so that it would go into effect with the fiscal 2026 fiscal year, or starting in that year. Moving next to section 31 on page 47, this makes modifications to a number of the license plate fees for regular as well as special specialized types of plates, disability plates, along with the validation sticker fees. So there are a number of fee increases. Those had originally been set to change to different amounts in a future year. This is now set to go into effect August 1st. Next is moving to section 36, trip permits. This establishes a different fee for temporary 30-day permits based on 1/12 of the cost of the registration for vehicles like trucks and tractors that's imposed for annually registered vehicles. That'll be jumping down to section 75, which is found on the bottom of page 77. This establishes a no-show fee for driver's license exams or road tests, as well as for cancellations within a 24-hour period. And this is set to have an effective date of November 1st or earlier, depending on if the IT system is updated before that date. Section 83 is found on page 84, and this contains one of a couple of the provisions around elimination of fee stacking. And this was House language. The modification here is that some fee stacking is not eliminated. So for licenses that are revoked for some DWI, DUI-related violations, the current structure of imposing a fee for each revocation remains in place, but a single fee would go into place or be imposed for other types of revocations, as well as for driver's license suspensions. And then Section 85 is one of a series of sections that involves changes to project selection process. And these largely deal with clarifying requirements for scoring, weighting, and criteria used in selecting some type selecting projects under some of MnDOT's programs, as well as requiring that information around the process be published on the department's website. Section 85 deals with the state freight and passenger rail plan and identifying projects within the plan, candidate projects evaluated, and the results of the evaluation. Section 87 revises, or actually it kind of creates a clarification that goes to the listing of what purposes are permitted for trunk highway dollars. So it creates a cross-reference clarifying the source of funds and the interaction with the other limits that are in place in statute on purposes and activities. And then Section 89 is a codification of an existing Department of Transportation entity, the Transportation Programming Investment Committee, or TPIC, as it's referred to. So this would establish in statute that MnDOT is directed to create the committee and identify membership, and it lays out some of the requirements around meetings and information on decision-making of both the committee and the commissioner that has to be made public, as well as directing creation of a transportation programming and investment, a investment opportunity plan. Section 91 directs MnDOT to create a pavement investment guide and set some requirements on use of that guide. Section 94 is another project selection process change, kind of similar to what I mentioned earlier. And this one relates to the Safe Routes to School program around putting requirements on the department's website and identifying projects that have been considered and the results of that consideration. Section 98 is a somewhat similar set of requirements, and this one is for the local road improvement program as far as information on website, identification of projects selected and so forth. Moving then to Section 102, this contains changes to the rail safety inspection program. This is modified from the original House position in that it does not increase the number of state rail safety inspectors that would be funded through the assessment on railroads. And there's instead a direct appropriation from the general fund for additional inspectors. Section 113 is found on page 105. This establishes some requirements on metro mobility fares and alignment with federal requirements as well as using the fares just for metro mobility purposes. Section 114 is the metro mobility forecasted funding provision that was mentioned with the delayed effective dates that would go into effect in fiscal year 2026. And then Section 116 on page 107 goes to the authorization for the Metropolitan Council to issue regional transit capital bonds. And Section 116 establishes a limitation on the use of the bond proceeds that they could not go towards light rail transit projects or line extensions. Section 118 is found on page 108 and requires reporting from the opt-outs, the replacement service providers, both to the Met Council and then from there to the legislature around operating expenses and reserves. Moving then to section 128, this is found on page 114 of the bill. This directs a couple of state agencies and the courts to set up best practices around processing citations to ensure that a court appearance is required or established when warranted. Section 129 sets up some reporting requirements, again, for the opt-outs on the use of federal COVID-related funds. Section 131, now moving to page 115, creates an exemption from the current age limit for type 3 vehicles used in pupil transportation so that the oldest of the vehicles can be used for a longer period of time. This expires in August of 2022. Section 132 is the other piece to the MinPass single occupant vehicle provision I mentioned earlier, and this is the directive to request the approval from the Federal Highway Administration to allow for that. Section 133 contains requirements around establishing a freight network optimization tool and lays out what the tool should contain. Section 134 directs MnDOT to implement policies on the capital-related project development process, and it lays out for various types of programs that are within the department what the project selection process has to include. And also requires a report to the legislature. Section 135 is found on page 117, and it directs the Department of Public Safety to provide availability of time slots for knowledge tests for school bus endorsements. And this is temporarily in effect. It would extend until December 31st. Of 2021. Moving then to section 137, there are a series of reports required in the bill. One of them is on transportation revenue and expenditures. Another one, section 138, is on school bus stop arm cameras and violations, as well as the grants that are funded in the appropriations article. Section 139 is a legislative report on expenditures for the driver's license exam stations. Recall that the exam stations are required to stay open and are funded for the upcoming biennium. This would be a report going along with that, identifying expenditures for those stations. Section 140 is a modified work zone safety provision. This is modified from what had been in the House language as it passed the House. And instead of laying out requirements for an implementation proposal and an assessment, this is a speed management study requirement that's put into place. Section 141 establishes a same-day driver's license issuance pilot project in two locations. And then Section 142 directs MnDOT to do a study and report to the legislature on methods to involve the legislature in project selection decision-making. Section 143 on page 122 contains a study requirement on looking at transit and particularly commuter impacts in the Twin Cities metro area post COVID pandemic. Section 144 establishes an independent expert review of MnDrive. This would be led by the most recent chair of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology, and really has two different components to it. One is centered around reviewing MnDrive's performance, impacts on process, interaction between the department and the deputy registrars and driver's license agents. And then there's a second component that is to look at driver exam stations. And there are two different reports for those two components that are due in coming time period. Moving to page 126, section 146 sets up a task force to examine dedicated funds. This is another piece of the permissible uses of highway funds topic area. So this task force would have duties that are looking at highway fund expenditures, permissibility, looking at various specific areas as well as generally at all of the areas across the departments and how trunk highway and HETD funds are used, and then reporting back to the legislature. The other task force that's established is found in section 147. This is on salvage titles and examining the salvage designation and its utility and possible alternatives to how to identify the condition of a vehicle. There are a couple of technical changes, and then wrapping up, section 151 on page 131 has a repealer, and there are several provisions being repealed. Paragraph A eliminates a authority for transfer of funds for tax collection costs that does not actually allow for the transfer. There's still a law that would need to be enacted to effectuate it. Paragraph B is part of the Department of Public Safety changes in driver's record and vehicle record data access. So there are new provisions being put into place, replacing the subdivision that's being repealed on subscription service and data access. Paragraph C is elimination of a crash reporting requirement for citizens. Paragraph D is a set of administrative rules that are being eliminated, and those rules deal with diabetes diagnoses. And then paragraph E also has some administrative rule removal, and these involve school bus inspection requirements that are being replaced with some requirements in the bill in statute. And then finally, paragraph F is part of the recodification of the highway funds permissible uses, and that has a delayed effective date going along with the delays of other changes in the bill to be in fiscal 2026. And that, Madam Chair, wraps up the overview of some of the key changes.
Thank you so much, Mr. Burris. And so there's about 22 minutes left in our committee time. I will note that there are the MnDOT, DPS, Met Council are all on the line if there's any member questions for them. And first up, I see Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. I'm not going to talk as much about what's in the bill or not in the bill as far as good versus bad or not, because I think Mr. Chair did a great job in negotiating both the House position and the Senate position, and I think I think it has potential to be a very bipartisan bill. I did want to spend just a little bit of time about the process and then a little bit about maybe what's not in the bill. But the process, and I know, Mr. Chair, you and I agree that it wasn't necessarily the way that we would have liked, and I know that you wanted to have more involvement from others, at least during the special session, because once we we ended the regular session, sine die, everything went back to the beginning, and all the work that was done would have to have been came forward, but I appreciate that you accepted all of the work done in conference committee and accepting all those that were agreed to. But after that, the bill actually was negotiated and was done by the two chairs. And Mr. Chair, I know that you wanted a few more people involved, but that was not available to you. And so we had to accept the process the way it went. The challenge, though, is that we would see the bill come to committee and then move forward to Ways and Means and off to the floor. We seem to think that this process is similar to a conference committee, in which conference committees come back, it's either up or down. But in special session, we start over with. And I think that's the frustration that a lot of us feel, is that there hasn't been an awful lot of direct input, certainly from others outside of the committee and those negotiating. And it's not a reflection on whether or not decisions were right or wrong, or whether or not the items that you negotiated were good, but that the process really didn't allow for people staying abreast of what was going on. There was time for us to have gotten this bill into this committee's hands, heard it, had some inquiries, sent it to Ways and Means, and still get it out of committee, off the floor before the 1st of July. But that's not the decision that was made. And so I just am sharing my frustration with that whole process. And so your comments are certainly appreciated. And I do understand that your hands are tied in that particular fashion. The other question, though, is that we have been hearing a lot of concerns over the past year about safety on our transit system. And that is the one area that seems to be a little lax in this bill, and would have liked to have seen a little bit more involvement in that. And so I would prefer if you had some comment on that as well. And I'll let you answer those two questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I think we're all a little bit frustrated with the process. Chair Hornstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Petersburg. And I really don't disagree with your analysis of what happened here since the regular session. So your points are well taken. And I also share your concerns about transit safety. And of course, there was an accompanying, provision, that is directly tied to, the issues around a fair enforcement. So this was a strong House position in the negotiations, and we did talk about it quite a bit. We kept it in our offers really up until the end, Representative Petersburg. But unfortunately, this was not a provision that the Senate could accept. I think there were some, potential amendments and ways we could have perhaps come to agreement. But at the end of the day, they did not wish to include this. And I really hope, Representative Petersburg, and we have done really good bipartisan work in this committee and in the House in general on these issues. And I really hope that in 2022, we have 6 more months really until the next session starts. And, I intend to continue to work hard on this, roll up my sleeves. I want to thank Representative Elkins for his hard work on this. A week ago Saturday, Representative Petersburg, Representative Elkins and Senator Dibble, who are the authors, who is the author of the provision in the Senate, were working very, very hard that Saturday afternoon to try to come up with a compromise. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So we're going to continue to work on this.
Madam Speaker, Mayor Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you for that comment. I appreciate that. I do understand that that Met Council does have some a fair amount of dollars available through the federal offers and federal dollars coming to them. Do you know what they may be planning to do with this with these federal funds? I'm aware that the challenge with their program, and I think sometimes they call it ambassador program, sometimes they call it community activists or community members, but unless legislature gives them authority to issue citations and so forth, I don't think they can do that. So basically, they're just going to be, if the Met Council uses those programs, they're going to have to call for security and Metro Police in order to actually do the work, which could actually create a negative effect because people may not take them seriously and actually may target them a little. So do you have any comment about what Met Council may be considering?
Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, you're absolutely right that, you know, the administrative citations piece of the legislation and, you know, having other personnel on the trains go together. I know we have Mr. Shetman on the call, and perhaps Mr. Shetman can address your question about staffing and the federal funds.
Mr. Shetman, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Great. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetman, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And I appreciate the question, Representative Petersburg, and I can attest that we were working very hard over the course of the of these last couple weeks to try to push the administrative citations initiative across the finish line. Unfortunately, we did fall short in pursuit of that. However, you are correct, Representative Petersburg. The council is fortunate to have some of the American Rescue Plan funds that we intend to lean into transit safety here. We're going to let the dust settle here just a little bit and see. And we were waiting to see where things landed here with the transportation bill. But I think you'll be hearing from the Met Council here in the next few weeks regarding our plans moving forward. The administrative citations bill really did two things. It allowed someone other than a sworn officer to be able to write an administrative citation, and then it also allowed us to reduce the penalty from not paying your fare from a misdemeanor to an administrative citation. What it doesn't do is it doesn't preclude us from, again, leaning into transit and trying to have more of a presence on our system. And we just had a meeting this morning with our folks to make sure that we are going to be aggressive with that. And so I can tell you that we share the same concerns that you have, and I appreciate you raising this. We have strong bipartisan support for this in the House, and we'll be communicating with you here in the next couple of weeks about what our plans look like to really move forward with this and start addressing this as people start coming back to transit.
Thank you, Mr. Shetman. Representative Petersburg, did you have any other follow-up?
Thank you for that. I think that's helpful. And I think most of the rest of my comments, I think I'll wait to the floor because as an informational meeting, we don't have privy of changing the bill anyway. So I think those comments are there. But I did want to, just in closing, in case I don't speak again, to thank staff just as and the chair for all his work. But especially on our side, Joe Marble, who makes me look a lot better than I am, keeps me informed and really does a great job staying on top of things. I rely on him a lot, and I appreciate that. But also to Mr. Dodge and Mr. Howell for their work. And of course, the great work in spreadsheets by Mr. Lee and Matt Burris's ability to really understand the language issue, too. I really appreciate all their work and thank them for that job. And I think we'll have a nice, robust, and I think very, conscious and well-received debate on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Mason?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd appreciate if somebody could give a little bit of a elaborate or clarification on item 169, the collision, where the report is going to the commissioner. And I guess I know this, you know, given the fact that most of us know what the standard procedure is, could you tell me about this, why this provision is in?
Representative Mason, do you think, would that be DPS to answer that question, Chair Hornstein?
I'm trying to find the citation, Madam Chair, Chair Mason, I'm trying to find the citation. Are you talking about a section? I don't think we have a section.
Okay, it's literally right at the end. It's item 169.09.
Okay.
And it is titled Collisions, and it's about an accident report to the commissioner.
I don't see a 169. Maybe I could ask Mr. Burris for clarification here.
Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, so this is found in section 151. It's one of the repealers. So it's line 131.5, paragraph C. This was part of the Department of Public Safety's initiatives. And what it proposes to do is repeal the requirement for individuals who are involved in some accidents to independently submit a report to the department around that accident. And what, you know, at risk of speaking for the department, what they had indicated is that that information is largely already gathered in more significant accidents by law enforcement, and that the information, and that's through a, you know, kind of standardized reporting and accident identification methodology, and so that the reporting from individuals, citizens, is not information that particularly gets utilized by the department once it's submitted.
Okay.
Is that amazing?
Thank you. Yeah, that helps.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I realize we're running short of time. I'll try to make this very quick. I was reviewing my MNLAR's quarterly report this morning. I just want to make sure that there's language in the bill that changes the odometer length of time that odometer readings have to be reported to match up with federal regulations. I believe it's in there. I just want to put that on the record.
Would that be Mr. Burris?
Mr. Burris.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it is indeed in there. That is another Department of Public Safety initiative. It's found on section 106, page 102, and that's an update to the reference to the federal regulations, as well as allowing for electronic odometer disclosures.
Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Mr. Burris. And a couple of other points. I don't see anything in here dealing with real ID. I realize only 23% of Minnesotans have the real ID. The deadline's been extended, but is there anything in the bill that encourages or speeds up the process for citizens to get their real ID?
Chair Hornstein?
Yes, there are some real ID provisions in the bill. I'll ask Mr. Burris to elaborate on that.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and members, there is one Real ID related provision on online Social Security applications, but as far as getting a Real ID compliant license, I'm not aware of any. I don't believe there are any provisions that specifically relate to that. I'm not sure if Mr. Lee had some further comments to it.
Mr. Lee?
Madam Chair, members, there's a House position that had a $2.4 million appropriation for extra staffing for the Real ID. That was not included in the final agreement.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson?
Thank you. Thank you to Mr. Lee, Mr. Burris, and to Chair Hornstein for that information. I think that's all I have at this point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to also respond, Representative Torkelson. It's a good question, and I think in the course of our conversations, because the federal government had extended out the deadline, you know, again, we felt in the House that this should be funded. But I think with the deadline extension, that fell off. But it is something that we should revisit, certainly, moving forward, because what we know happens is that people, you know, wait till the last minute, and there are a lot of, there's still questions and confusion about Real ID everywhere I go. So I, you know, again, I agree that we should be, we shouldn't just procrastinate here, and it does deserve our attention. But it's, again, the one provision, I think that was Representative Hansen's provision, is in the bill.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Representative Koznick.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair, and congratulations to Chair Hornstein on putting together this bill. You know, not too many concerns with it, but I just wanted to point out, I appreciate the conversation on transit safety as probably the lead on our side, trying to get some movement on that with my council and Representative Elkins and previous representatives, the previous biennium. So it's, we've got some policy work still yet to do on that. So this is a budget year, and we've got some more work to do there. It's certainly disappointing that the Senate just has issues with trying to figure this stuff out. It's not that complicated. We need to move to make our transit system safer because it's the right thing to do, but it's also important for our the reputation of our transit system and the region as we talk about public safety more broadly. And then also for the committee, I want to note, you know, the one thing that maybe we can work on in the following years, and it's kind of missed opportunity here, is with the use of transit changing with the pandemic. I know that there's a little bit of a study included in here, but maybe that'll be the basis for us to take a closer look at how we fund and prioritize some of the transit modes from regular route service to ABRT and things like that to make sure that are taking advantage to restructure and repurpose some dollars that were no longer as effective and in demand as of what the public is asking for us so that we can stretch our dollars farther. And along with that, Mr. Chair, I hope you will remain open and to discussing about the funding equity for the Orange Line to be similar and equitable to some of the new ABRT that's funded in this bill and that's currently in funding, that those lines should be funded similarly with the responsibilities being borne on the locals a little bit more heavily on the Orange Line than there is on the other side. And then that conversation could also entail going to the guideway new plan requested systems that I think we should take a look as a state, as a committee, when we fund new lines of different modes of transportation. There's kind of an assumed that the state, you know, as long as we get it built, that the state will just continue to fund the operating losses and the ongoing maintenance. And it's pretty difficult as we have an aging infrastructure to continue to expand new modes and then leave our aging infrastructure behind. We need to work on a policy that, you know, if the state helps build it, those local entities and people that are advocating for new expanded modes and lines, that the locals should be paying for the operating losses or maintenance ongoing on some of those lines. It's the expectation is just that, you know, Uncle Sam or the state government here will pay for it. And I think that's a poor expectation to have. And we as a committee need to defend the tax dollars to make sure that, you know, we're not just building lines that are going to lose money. You know, we've had a discussion and debate on North Star. Another opportunity that I think we need to discuss further is setting some baseline metrics. If the North Star doesn't meet, we can't continue to just bleed money in the manner that we have. And we should seriously continue to take a look at what levels, at what point do we shut off the North Star and repurpose those dollars. So those are some things that we can work on, but this is a funding year. And Mr. Chair, I think you did a pretty decent job of advocating for the House position. I appreciate some of the different provisions that are in there. And of course, I always appreciate working with you. So thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Chair Hornstein, any follow-up?
No, I just wanted to thank Representative Koznick for his comments, and you know, I appreciate your referring to the study in the bill. We'll be examining commuter patterns going forward, not only on North Star, but also the opt-out commuter service and the Metro Transit commuter service. Because as you correctly point out, Representative Koznick, we are entering kind of a new era here. You know, transit will come back. We don't know how exactly. We don't know the time frame. But we do know that we have to examine it very closely in order to make funding decisions. So that is a new provision in the bill that came out as a result of our conversations with the Senate. So we will have that data actually in time for the next session. So I'm looking forward to that report, and I think that will help guide many of the issues that you raised, Representative Koznick, our conversations about those issues. So thank you for your comments.
Next up is Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, you know, comment on a couple of things that didn't make it. You know, the speaker has been talking about us having all of our own individual baskets of disappointments. And, you know, the two biggest things two of the biggest items in my personal, basket of disappointments are things that did enjoy bipartisan support in the House. The first one we've already touched on is the administrative citations bill. And at one point in the negotiation, I think the Senate had indicated that they were willing to accept an administrative citations bill as long as we accepted their language. And as Chair Hornstein has pointed out, Senator Dibble and I spent a great deal of time with Mr. Shetton and his staff on a Saturday night trying to pick through that, and ultimately concluded that, yeah, we could swallow hard and by and large accept their language. And then in the end, the Senate still wouldn't accept the provision. So that was a real head scratcher. But, you know, definitely I wanted to express my appreciation to Representative Koznick in particular for his contributions to putting that bill together. And of course, the other big item in my basket of disappointments was our inability to do anything immediately for the deputy registrar's situation. So early in the negotiations, the chairs had sent Senator Jasinski off and I off to work to devise a compromise solution on that issue. And Senator Jasinski and I were able to come to an agreement in principle in about 15 minutes, actually. And again, we allowed the Senate staff to draft the language. I think Alexis Stengel did a really good job on the language on that one as well. And at one point we had in negotiations, we had an indication that that the Senate would accept that compromise. And in the end, they didn't. So we do have the study that Rick King and Teresa Wise will be doing, and that is to be delivered to us before we convene in February. And hopefully that will clarify matters enough that we will, in fact, be able to act. But it's still nonetheless extremely disappointing to me that that we haven't been able to implement at least a stopgap measure between now and then to help bolster their finances. And I appreciate on this one, you know, support of Representative Petersburg and Representative Torkelson and helping to push this towards a conclusion as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Chair Hornstein?
Thank you, Representative Elkins, for all of your work. You have a number of provisions in the bill which are helpful, but I understand your disappointment about the two that aren't in there. I will simply say that the study that Representative Elkins mentioned is going to be very comprehensive. As you know, Rick King is a trusted voice on a variety of issues. He helped guide the whole process, the transition from MnLARS to MnDrive. He has stepped up and is going to examine very closely the needs of deputy registrars, as well as a variety of issues that we address in the bill, and, you know, including driver stations and you know, the whole a number of different areas that we need to examine as we transition into the new MIN drive system. So, you know, rather than I think, you know, there was some discussion about a temporary fee increase. You know, I think that we want to really look at this study and, you know, then any kind of fee adjustments, you know, can be made based on the conclusions of an independent study. And this is not from the agency. It's not from the deputy registrar. It's an independent study by a very trusted who will be kind of supervising this process. Again, this is something that's going to be done relatively quickly. And so, you know, in a matter of months, I think we'll have the data, we'll have a very, you know, robust discussion in our committee about this issue. And so, you know, whatever fee increases or fee adjustments and what the sources of those funds are, you know, that's all on the table for further discussion. So this is just, you know, I think we're being cautious and strategic about how we approach this question, but it is not the end of the conversation. So thank you. And we look forward to more work that you'll be doing as a result of the study. I assume, Representative Elkins, there'll be some legislative recommendations, and I hereby assign you to follow through on those.
Well, and I will be involving Representative Torkelson in Petersburg in this one as well.
Last question we have up here is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just a quick follow-up to Mr. Lee, and it is in relationship to the question that Representative Torkelson asked about Real ID. On line 427 of your spreadsheet, it's under DVS staffing and operations. The first year of the biennium is $2.9 million. I had always assumed that that was for the $2 point something million that we had set for Real ID compliance. Is that not correct? And if not, what is that money for?
Mr. Lee?
Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, that is part of the governor's operating increase request. It's a number of pieces for both the driver and the vehicle side. So you can see the driver side is on 427 and the vehicle side is on line 448. It's a number of initiatives that I'd have to have the governor's rec to go through all of them, but I think part of it had to do with MinDrive on the vehicle side, also additional examiners and central office staff for the driver side in terms of driver's testing. But it's funded at a lower level than the governor's request on the driver side and on the vehicle side. But it could essentially be also staff that process Real ID applications. It's just not specific to temporary staff for Real ID, which was a governor's request in a House position.
Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, Madam Chair. And Mr. Lee, if I just kind of rephrase that. So it's also for additional staff for the existing or for re-implementing all of the driver's license stations as well, do you think, or is it just in general?
Mr. Lee?
It is more general. There's an additional appropriation for the drivers, for like examiners for all of the drivers, testing stations. And that is on line 432. And that's one time of about almost 5.2 million.
I'll review it later. Thank you.
Certainly, and I can send the governor's rec that has the details on those operating changes as well.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I don't see any more hands up. So with that, I will hand it over to Representative Hornstein for closing comments.
Thank you very much, members, and thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the comments that people made. I think that all of you highlighted many of the questions I've been getting since, you know, through this process and since we released the bill. I just want to add, you know, my thank yous to our staff, you know, on the DFL side, Dan Dodge, as always, doing an incredible job. Mr. Howe and Ms. Jennifer Nelson has really been very, very helpful and instrumental in helping to interpret many of these issues, and has been there every step of the way for us in our caucus. So special thanks to all three of you. I said thank you once to the committee members in our last meeting, but I trust this is our last session. We are going to have some interim hearings. I've already had some conversations with Representative Petersburg about that. Two or three interim hearings, perhaps between now and January 31st when we reconvene. But this time, I hope this is a chance to say thank you to everybody and appreciate each and every member's work here on this committee. Many of you have provisions in this bill. Many of you have had input into it. A lot of the House provisions really are in this, and I'm very pleased that this is a balanced bill between roads, bridges, transit, lots of good policy in here. It does move us forward. Again, as I said at the beginning, like in any negotiation, there are disappointments, but in general, it is a solid transportation bill for what we were given in terms of a general fund target. So I'm pleased with it. I hope that you will support this bill on both sides of the aisle tomorrow. Look forward to a good debate tomorrow. And again, my deep appreciation to everybody on this committee for your hard work here in 2021 so far. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll hand it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. With no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.